Get all the MasterForce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with MasterForce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with MasterForce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Your alternative talk radio contact. The Planet. KGRARadio.com.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro, fears about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Me and my intros are not exactly as formal as others, but well, yeah, so I was looking back because I'm like, okay, well, this is the fifth annual All Halloween with Steve Stockton and Cisco Murdoch, and I'm looking for when the first one was, and it was way back. ITF 57 was our very first All Halloween episode, so holy smokes, and here we are all these years later still doing it. We've done it every year, so welcome back, Steve and Cisco.
Thanks for having us back. In some ways, it doesn't seem like it could be possibly the fifth year, and then in other ways, it seems like it should be more than that. So,
yeah, no. In fact, I was like, at 57, are we sure? I was like, was that the number, or is it actually earlier than that? I mean, of course, everybody's been on other times, but
I still would have thought it was farther along than 57.
I know, me too, to be honest with you. But here we are again. We've got lots of creepy tales. I know you guys are chomping at the bit to tell, but everybody doing well? How's everyone doing?
Fantastic. We're thrilled. Steve and I have been up to no good.
I don't expect anything less from you guys. That's exactly what I want to hear. Okay.
I've just been rolling. And you heard, remember last year we told you that Steve's, we all know Steve's birthday is on Halloween. So happy birthday, dear love.
Yes. Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. And so remember he kind of, as a surprise, I wrote a little ghost story and I narrated it and sent it to him for his YouTube channel for 13 Past Midnight, and everybody loved it and they wanted more, so I wrote more, and then it turned into five parts, and then my life turned upside down and the company I worked for went out of business with no notice, and just everything shifted, and the story was so good and the characters were so good. I was telling Steve, it was like that story he tells about the Shadow Knows. What was it? Walter Brimley?
Walter Gibson.
Gibson. I was close. Where the shadow kind of came to life. These characters kind of came to life, Shannon. I swear, because I'd do a segment, I'd write it, and then I'd narrate it, and then I'd send it to Steve, and we'd play it on his channel. And I'd be listening to it. I'm like, did I write that? I don't remember writing that. Because the characters are kind of right themselves. Well, this year, we've been working all year, and I finally got the end of it. So we decided we're going to make it the second book. So I just finished my second book. I'm very thrilled by that. And it's got everything, doesn't it, Steve?
Yeah, everything in there is based on truth events, even though it's fictitious in nature. But it's got Bigfoot, Dogman, ghosts, shadow people, candy corn, hillbillies, moonshine, you name it, it's in there, and it all works. There's so many different story arcs and things. It's a fantastic story, and I've had people looking for it for last year. We started last October, And like she said, we got five parts in before Halloween. And I think it's about 10 hours, just those five parts.
Right.
And I've had people get mad at me. Where's the end? Where's part six? How's it end? You know, I'm just going to give up. And I'm like, she's working on it. It's coming. Be patient. It's worth the wait. And boy, is it ever. So it's here. I've got a little sneak peek. I've heard the first half of it. And wow.
Well, you had me at Hillbillies and Moonshine. I mean, then you throw all the other stuff in there. It's just bonus. This is all bonus. Sounds great.
Ghosts. It's got, have you ever heard of the Rougarou?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well,
if people don't know what a Rougarou is, though, can you just quickly tell them what that is?
It's a French dog, man.
Wee wee.
It's basically a legend. It's very much a dog man, but of more like New Orleans and Louisiana. Right. And
Pepe La Lugaroo.
Yeah.
That boy lives down south. He extra angry too. He's hot down there.
Rougarou. I said it wrong. There's a Rougarou and a Loup-garou. That's a werewolf, but it's they're kind of related. But yeah, it's got an amazing fight that builds up between. I don't know. Am I telling too much, Cisco? There's a fight between dog men and big feet. So,
which isn't so far fetched. I mean, that's got to happen sometime.
I had to sit down with people who, you know, who study dog men and the Rougarou and study Bigfoot, and because I wanted it to be stories that really happened to people, but all in one in this one place. It's got a dead children's playground. It's got ghost kids. It's got a soul collector. It's got psychics and mediums and Ouija boards and seances. And if Halloween, the only thing it has everything to do with Halloween and cryptids and stuff like that, except trick-or-treaters. Because I figure who would trick-or-treat in a place like this?
Maybe the Rougarou ate them all. There we go. Yeah,
it could have, but it's actually coming out this weekend on simultaneously on my channel and Steve's channel. And that way you get the whole audiobook for free. Wow. We're going to put it paperback, and then Steve's going to turn it into a screenplay, aren't you, Steve?
Yeah, I'm already working on it.
Well, congratulations. That is, yep. That's incredible to hear. I know you've been working on that for quite a while. So,
yeah, but I think it's worth it. It's something you could be proud of. But,
like she said, it's all based on true stuff. One of my favorite parts of the whole thing is where a guy's in the woods and he pees on a tree and immediately has a dogman encounter right after because the dogman felt challenged. Uh-huh. That really happened. If you know Brian Bowden, who does the No Bo Boomy podcast,
uh-huh. Yep.
He was the one that peed on the tree and a dogman got after him. So that's one
lesson
of my
learned.
Don't pee on the trees if you're in the woods.
Yeah, you never know who might not quite like it very much.
Yeah. Yeah, and I had to get his permission to put it in the book. And he said, I'll be mad if you don't.
Oh, that's cool.
But you guys were talking about curses. You want to hear a little bit about curses?
Absolutely.
Well, you got to think. Now, I was thinking today, actually, I've been kind of looking into this for a little while, and it's just something that gets me. It's words, right? You think about it. It's just words. And then you think spells and prayers and all these things are just words. So what makes the words work? It's got to be intent and energy, right? If you think about it. And then curses are more like words said with intent with a lot of emotion. Because think about some of the things you've got. You've got like some that, you know, we kind of think about around Halloween because you've got like that great movie Practical Magic. That whole movie and the whole lineage and bloodline of those two ladies started with a curse. Because I guess it was her, maybe their great grandmother or their grandmother or something. They said she was a witch and she had had an affair with one of the town's guys and she was pregnant. And the next thing, you're a witch. And next thing you know, they're burning her because that's the way they did it back in the day. And she's cursed the town and said that this town is always going to be, you know, have problems and everything else. But think about it. It's just words. So what makes a curse work? So we've got like curses that come from burned witches. We've got curses that come from, say, Native Americans, you know, that get cursed land. Some land is like cursed before they got there. So who cursed that? That's just questions, right? You've got famous curses that we know about, like the Jersey Devil, right? And that really started with a curse because you've got old Madam Leeds, right? She had 12 kids, didn't want a 13th and cursed it to the devil. And that's how the whole Jersey Devil thing started, right? Like, you're supposed to have it, and it, whatever you, you know, you hear all these twisted tales, like it was born and wound up flying around the room or whatever, and went up the chimney and went out to the Pine Barrens to live forever. All started with a curse, supposedly. Okay. And then you've got, you know, just so many different ones that you've heard over time, and you think it's just words. So what is the power of words? Now, there's one story that I've got, an old one and a new one, kind of a little bit more modern. But this one goes back, and I heard it as a kid. And when I heard it, I don't think I could sleep for, I don't think I ever slept right since. But because it was just so creepy. All right, there's this lady, and they're more like pioneer, you know, pioneer times, living out in the mountains. And they're in a little sparse town, and her husband are having a lot of problems. He's a fur trapper, and he just comes home and he gets drunk, and he's just real, you know, hard to live with, and just an aggravating old cuss. And something went wrong, and she decided, that's it, I've had enough of this man. And she's just so angry after they had a fight. She yells out to the empty cabin, I would curse you to the devil. You're no good. And I guess after that, she goes to sleep, and she cries herself to sleep, whatever. And she wakes up to the smell. Something smells really strong, and it smells like sulfur or something burning. And she looks up, and she thought, in her, you know, in all of her emotion and everything else, maybe she did tend the fire right, and some embers got out and started burning the floor or something like that. So she sits up in the little cot that they had in this one room, and she looks toward the fireplace. And she does indeed see the fire still there, but everything is fine. But she can smell this overwhelming smell of burning and sulfur. And she starts to see this light start to twinkle in front of the fireplace. And the smell's getting stronger. And before she knows it, in front of her is standing an awful-looking thing. Half goat. It looks like a man, but it looks like it's part animal. And what she described that we would know and be familiar with as what the devil might look like, or a demon. It's got a goat's head, and it's got red eyes, but it has more features too, like a human, his arms and legs, but he has cloven feet. And he looks at her and he says, so creepy, what do you have in mind? Basically. What do you mean? And she's just sitting up, and she can't believe what she sees. And she says, I don't know who you are. What do you do? You know, and she's just screaming and going crazy. And he said, you called me. You said you would sell him to me, and I'm here, you know, for a price. Do you want him gone? And she said, yes, I want both of you gone. Take him, and you leave too. So they go back, you know, and he's just creepy. The whole time he's talking to her, he's peeling back his own fingernails on these cloven-like hands. Oh. So he's peeling off his fingernails. He's throwing them into the fire. And the fire's going, and, you know, which adds to the whole thing. So she thinks, poof, he's gone. She says, yes, yes, I'll make any deal you want. Okay. And he laughs, and he just disappears as quickly as he came. She about passes out or falls back to sleep. I don't know how people do that, but she did. And she thinks the whole thing is a dream. Until she gets up in the morning, she goes over to boil some water to make whatever she's drinking, tea or whatever. And she sees two burned places in front of the fireplace in the shape of cloven hooves burned into the wooden floor of her cabin. Now she's worried. So later on that day, she goes with the rest of the women in the little town, and they're doing their washing by the river. And she's telling them, she goes, I think I've gone crazy. Something showed up. She tells them the story, and, you know, they laugh at her and think she's crazy. And maybe she's been drinking a little bit of what her husband's been drinking, but he didn't come home. And day goes by, he doesn't come home. And 3 days go by, he doesn't come home. And they find him dead. And the way he died, a branch fell off a tree and went right, like, basically through his chest and killed him. Very odd way to die. And now she knows that something has gone on. So they go back. She's going back to wash clothes again, and she goes down by herself, and she doesn't come back. And they go looking for her and said, well, she went down to wash her clothes or to get her clothes off the bushes where they were drying. And they find her dead, face down in shallow water, very shallow water, face down, drowned and dead. And later when they cleaned her body to bury her, they found one cloven hoof on her back, burned into her back like something had burnt it into her back.
Mm.
So she's got a cloven print on her back, like something held her down in that water. And there's the price she paid. So what's in the words? What causes the curse? What cause? Is it the emotion, the intent? Is it just some low-lying things hanging around waiting for somebody to say something and act on it? Mm. I don't know. But here's one that's even better, and it's newer. This young man and his wife and his young son move into his mother's house after she passes. Lots of little things start happening. You know, shadow this. He sees a shadow out of the corner of his eye. You know, things are moving that shouldn't be moving. The little boy's having a hard time sleeping. And these things keep escalating, escalating. And he remembers his mom had a little bit of a gift, a little sensitivity. And she used to say she saw a woman from like the 1920s every once in a while standing in front of the picture window. And he never thought anything of it. And he never saw that himself. And he thought maybe it was that. My mother always said there was a ghost here. But he's starting to see stuff like having a heart, like sleep paralysis. And he'd wake up sometimes and he'd see a male in his face, like in his face, like hovering over him, and he's like holding him down and just screaming. He doesn't hear any sound. He just knows this guy's screaming at him. And then it'll go away. And for a while, he tells himself he's imagining, whatever. So this escalates over, you know, about 2 years. Just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And finally, he's like, I've done everything I can. I can't figure it out. He studied the history. He did everything he could think of, and he starts to reach out. He gets a hold of a really good medium that I happen to know, and she is very good. And she couldn't come by the house, but she got on the phone, and she says, well, I can tell you right now there's a ghost in your living room. And she's from around 1923. I'm getting the name Ivy, and I don't know if it's a first name or last name. She is buried in the Green Cemetery not far from you. And she is there in that house. She's like waiting for somebody that never showed up. So he's comforted by that. But she said, but there's another one and I can't quite place my finger on it. I have to come there because he's hanging back and she won't tell me anything about it. She knows he's there, but she won't tell me. They search and search and search. And finally, she gets from this ghost that this young man was about 22 and about a block and a half, two blocks away from where this man's house stood, there was a car accident. And he was drunk driving, and he ran a stop sign. And he killed a young mother and her two children. And when he heard about this, it was in the morning paper, and he was sitting at that very table in that house. He cursed the guy, basically didn't mean to. But he said, how could anybody be so stupid and irresponsible and kill these people? And he was just yelling to the air, and he was saying the guy's name. Somehow, because the guy was hanging around the accident site not far from him, was connected to that energy, and now he was anchored to this man in a curse that he never intended to do. And this medium and him had to sit and try to unravel all of this. And with the ghost help of the lady from the 1920s, she was ready to cross over, but she said she wouldn't leave without him because if she left, he'd never leave. And he was so angry, they had to spend time getting him unraveled from being, of course, dying drunk in an accident and not understanding what was happening. But he connected to that man's words and he basically cursed himself. How about that?
Wow. Whoa. I was not expecting that one there.
Food for thought. Yeah. Well, you know, you think about that in the Bible, it tells you that your words have weight. You have the power of life and death in your tongue, and you have what you confess. So it's easy to see how, of course, it can be intentional, you know, something said, like you said, with an intent. And then I think there can be unintentional curses, too. Things just happen. I mean, if you look at, there are cursed lands, there are cursed films, there are cursed books. And you wonder how some of those came out. Was it somebody somewhere speaking against it that started that? Or do some things just happen? And like you said, there's ground that the Native Americans, they call it soured, that it was cursed before they ever came along. And they've been here since time immemorial. So where'd that curse come from?
Right. Right. And you know how, when I first heard that story, I was amazed by it. And it gets very deep and into detail, and you know, but you get the basic gist of it. That man was absolutely shocked to find out that him just speaking out and yelling in anger like that, saying the guy's name, would anchor that ghost to him. Mm-hmm. And the ghost didn't know why he was there. He didn't realize what had happened. He just knew he was stuck there, and he was stuck to that guy. And that's why he was so angry and yelling at him, you know, in the middle of the night, because apparently that's what they have the most energy.
Fascinating.
So yeah, he was able to move on then?
Yep. She had to go back there a couple of times. And, you know, the guy had to say, you know, look, I forgive you. You know, things happen and people make mistakes. But a lot of ghosts are anchored that way. You know, I mean, they almost don't want to leave until they get forgiveness from whoever it is. I've known several of them that wouldn't cross over till they did that. And, you know, I often tell the people, you can, you know, if you forgive them, they'll move on. That also helps you. You don't have to forget what happened, but just forgive them, because we all make mistakes. But yeah, I just imagine that words have that kind of power. You know, they say don't speak ill of the dead. And I often wonder, is that where that comes from? Mm. You know, I mean, little things, little phrases like that, they all stem from, they all have a seed, you know, where they started from. And, you know, some of it have a lot of wisdom in it. I don't know. That one jarred me, you know.
Your friend, did she have to utilize both just speaking to him and, you know, kind of getting him in the know as to what was going on, plus using any kind of physical tools, you know, of the trade that might come up in such a situation? What kinds of things did she have to utilize to get him to move on?
Basically, what it took, and Steve and I kind of understand this because we've been involved in several incidents like this. Basically, what it took was first understanding what the issue was and how this happened. Once the young man, the living young father, understood what happened, he was shocked. He was just thrown back in his chair. He was very spiritual guy. He never intended anything for that to happen. And he went from being scared to death and not understanding to being so sorrowful for this man. So his actual sorrow, and he forgave the guy. The man had to understand what was going on. There was no tools used other than her gift, her explaining what was going on with this young man, and the other ghost from like the 1923, and her last name was Ivy. I forget her first name. She was just there, like you said, she was waiting for somebody, and she was buried in the graveyard. She died by the tree out front, the old tree that was out front. And I forget how she died. I apologize. But it was something odd. It was like she got hit by I don't think she got hit by a car. I really think she got hit by something different. I can't remember what it was. But and the fact that she could leave, she could finally see the light again. So she had a chance to cross over, and she would just stand there and say no and point at the other one and say, I'm not leaving till he does, because if I leave, he'll be lost forever. And I know what that feels like. So here's all these four strangers helping each other get untangled, helping them cross over. But yeah, no tools, just once, you know, he got it and he understood what had happened and everybody in the room forgave him, he decided to cross into the light. He walked with her and they left together.
Wow.
And it's incredible. But words, I mean, you know, that makes you think, because how many times did I curse at the driver in front of me or whatever? And you think,
whew. Right.
Because it's supposed to hurt both people. You don't get away with something like that, you know, curse wise.
Right.
You know, cause
you don't get away scot-free. That, and that first story proves that, right?
Right, right.
The devil demon curse proves that, which I want to talk to you about first, but finish your thought. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking, you know, because, you know, we've all been told, you know, whether you're doing magic or Wiccan or Native American stuff or anything like that, you think about it, if you do something bad or you do something good, it comes back on you threefold. If you do something good threefold on you, if you do something bad tenfold, which I always understood as a little girl, I understood that early because of the people around me and everything. It's just like, you don't use your stuff for bad, use it for good, nothing for greed or anything like that, or anger, because it comes back on you. And that was supposed to be the whole difference between, like, say, the Wizard of Oz and the Good Witch and the Bad Witch. The Good Witch did good things. The Bad Witch, every time she did something bad, it would come back on her. And that's why she looked like that. And that's why she was never happy. And she was always in darkness. You see what I mean? So if you think about words like that, and you think about curses, somebody put a curse on something, that's got to come back on them and hold them back too, in some ways. So I don't know that it's a fix, unless, I guess, you're battling evil, and then you use it for that. I guess it just X's each other out, I guess. I don't know. I don't have all the answers. I just know it freaks me out.
Oh, that part of the devil demon curse, you're talking about him peeling his own fingernails back. There are a few things that I'll watch in a film or something, and I'm just, it'll gross me out for hours, and fingernail stuff is one of them for sure.
Same. Fingernail removal, yeah. Or cutting into an eyeball or sticking something in somebody's eye. That is,
well, what was that? I think it was a Clooney movie. Syrian something or other. They had him tied to the chair and they were peeling off. He was taking off his finger. I was like, I am out of this room until this part is done. I can't do it. I can't do it. This is probably a question for both of you guys, but, you know, she has this, I curse you to the devil. And then she wakes up and lo and behold, the devil is standing there. What are you doing here? Well, you called me. Do you think at that point it's too late, or could she have said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. It was just heat of the moment, or it's done. She said it.
Sorry, wrong number. Just kidding.
Yeah, my bad. Go back up the fireplace.
I don't think it's ever too late to fight good. I really believe light beats dark. I really believe that, you know, that's just something I've lived with. I've seen real evil. You know, and the only thing you really have to fight with is the light, you know, darkness with light. So, I mean, I don't think it would ever be too late. I think it was too late once she made the bargain, you know, and then I don't know if that point, because they say once you sign that contract in blood, say, so to speak, we've all heard that, you know, is it too late to back out of that? I don't know. I mean, at one point, do you start losing the essence of you? I don't know.
Right.
And you give that over to something else. You know, I think cases you can.
She's like, damn it. I Black Phillip's literally in my damn living room now. Shoot.
Peeling off his fingernails.
Yeah, peeling off his dang fingernails.
Mm. Paring. I'll never forget that. A paring knife.
Whoa.
Oh, God. You know?
Me and Steve are both just like cringing right now.
Yeah.
Like,
but they live on fear, right? They So, of course, it's going to come with fear.
But what could have been the alternative for her? Could she have offered anything in her stead? And then she wouldn't have ended up in the river with the hoof burn on her back and drown and be gone.
I don't know. Like I said, I've known this one as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. I mean, I read this story. And I think when you hear stories like that, they stay with you and they kind of help you balance out your life, because you've always got, you know, anything that we take in, information taken is in there. So you kind of like, well, I know what happened to this, you know. So I've always thought that, first of all, don't ever sign any contract in blood. Don't ever make a bargain with something like that. I mean, it's just like you think about the genie in the bottle, right? I mean, yeah, we've got the new Disney stuff that comes out and it all turned out okay. But there's no real gin or genie story that ever works out.
Right.
Got your three wishes, they always change on you. Jinn is nothing to mess with. Those are ancient and they know what they're doing and they're always going to flip it on you. And I think that, you know, of course, the devil, the same way, don't bargain with the devil, you know, because it's always going to be a flip. You can sit there and think you can out. How many Twilight Zones have we seen, or old movies have we seen, where the guy thinks that they can outwit whatever it is that's giving them this? and it always flips on them. You know, give me $1 million. Okay, great. Well, then you go to jail because the IRS comes to give you. You know, it's a flip, yeah. You know? And I think that story was one of the early ones for me that just said, you know, whatever it is, you know, it's better to just pack up and leave the old man, or, you know what I mean, than to bargain with something else to take care of it for you.
Especially if it's going to stand there and peel back its own fingernails with a paring knife. Yeah. That'll stick with you. I'd be like, put me in the river. I'm done. I don't want to have that in my head anyway.
Imagine when they had the funeral, whatever it was, the undertaker dude, you know, in the village. Mm-hmm. You know, back then you had the guy who built coffins all day. That's all he did. You know, like the guy in Deadwood just built coffins all day, you know, but whoever prepared her and found that hoof print on her back, are you kidding me?
And I promised I'd tell this story tonight, Shannon, one of your listeners, Cody Turk.
Yes, please.
I mentioned it in the comments and he's like, oh, tell me, spill the beans. I'm like, listen to the Halloween show and I'll tell it. But and Cisco knows about this one. There was a place I was working out here, and it's outside of Portland. It was a good thing in a way that I had a long commute because I used that time on the train to write my first book on an iPad going back and forth to work. But this particular place, I was doing technical support for a communications company, and they moved locations from one place in the greater Portland area to another place in the greater Portland area. And we moved into this new building, but it wasn't a new building. It was an old building, but a new building for us. And it was so much nicer. We had a break room, and this was, you know, one of these high-tech type companies. So they had, you know, free coffee and snacks, and they'd bring water around to your desk and sodas and had video games and ping pong tables and pool table and all this stuff. Really, you know, nice stuff. But there was just something, particularly on one floor. There was one area back in the area that I was in that just, to me, it always felt off. And then would notice little things like I worked the closing shift. I would be there till 8, 9 o'clock at night, maybe longer if I got on a long call. And it was all about resolution. I had to stay on the call till the problem was resolved with the customer, the end client. So there were some, you know, 2-3 hour calls sometimes. So a lot of times I'd be the last one out of the building totally. Well, I noticed on several different occasions when I was getting ready to leave, and the lights were on a timer, so they'd go out and the doors would lock, and you couldn't even swipe in after the doors had locked. Once you left, you were out for the night, unless you had one of the special cards that would let you in any time, which I didn't. A lot of times, I'd be the last one out of the building, but when I left my area, I would go into the hallway where the lights were off. Well, they were motion detectors. They would come on as I walked through. And down at the far end of the hall, I would see somebody just go around the corner. And I'm talking like a pant leg and a sock and a dress shoe, you know, that kind of thing. And the only thing around that corner was the men's room. Something, you know, well, it's just somebody else, some other poor soul in here working, like, because there were other departments on other floors and this, that, and the other. And it, you know, didn't think much about it at first, but this continued. That's where it became a regular thing. And again, I was always the last one out of there. And I would see this person just as I was leaving, and never did get a catch or glimpse of them other than just a leg going around the corner. Well, one night I thought, I'm going to go down there and see who this is that's always in here at the same time I am. So I walked down this long hallway. I turn the corner, go into the restroom. The lights are out in there. Again, motion detection. The lights come on when I walk in. There's nobody in there. Now, this was, again, a corporate facility, so there were showers and things toward the back. I checked every stall. I checked the shower. There was no other exit. You came in and out one door, and I got the weirdest feeling in there. And then there were things that started happening. It's like this building had sat empty for years. And once the longer we'd been in there, once things kind of got active again, the activity kind of ramped up. And a lot of people were getting sick. It was affecting them physically. And at one point, I was counting about one person a week that was being taken out in an ambulance. And a lot of them from the area that I worked in. And I had some issues myself when I worked there. The first one being I had some problems with my blood pressure with it shooting sky high. I had blood pressure almost double what's supposed to be normal. and I had to get that under control. And just a lot of weird things like that going on. Well, I did some research and looked into it. I found out that the building had belonged to a banking company, a finance company. It wasn't a bank, but it was like a corporate office. When they went belly up, a lot of people lost their jobs, lost their livelihood. And it was a place that paid well, a little too well, unfortunately, and they went bankrupt. But I found out that one of the young executives, a guy just, I suppose, out of college, and I don't know his name, but I found out about the circumstances, had gone into that bathroom and taken his own life. He had hung himself in one of the bathroom stalls. And I honestly believe that's who I would see going in there, because there was nobody else there. And the one time that I did go in there just to see, there was absolutely nobody in there, no place for anyone to hide. And Cisco, thank goodness, she's empathic. And she started giving me these warnings. She said, there's something wrong at that place. And I'm like, yeah, no kidding. And she said, no, seriously, there's something there that's trying to attach itself to you. You need to get out of there. And I'd gotten something else that time it happened. I think I got like bronchitis or walking pneumonia or whatever they called it. I'd got gout, so I couldn't walk or couldn't speak. And I just, all these things, just one after another. And she's like, don't go back. She said, if you want to get well, if you want to live, don't go back. She said, don't even go back after your stuff. And she said, I know there's something there. There's one thing in particular that you want, that you really, really want. But she said, just leave it. Just, you can get another one. And there was, I had some crystals there. I had some books there. I had a whole desk full of stuff. But the one thing that she was picking up on, I had a little tiny carved Buddha that my daughter had given me. It was maybe only half an inch tall, very intricately carved, and just a gorgeous little thing, probably carved out of bone or something like that. But whatever it was attracted to that too, apparently. So I left it there, walked away. And I got better, and haven't had any problems since then. My books, my YouTube channel, everything absolutely took off, and I do all my work from home now with the narration and the writing. But I've heard from people that I know that's still there, that it continues. There was a lady that went in the ladies' room, which is on the other side of the wall through the gentleman's bathroom, and had some kind of fit, had to be carried out of there. And when they finally got her out and got her, I mean, she was like on the floor screaming. When they finally got her out of there, she had no recollection of even going into the bathroom. Didn't know what had happened or why. There was another guy that had a grand mal seizure that worked in my area, hit the floor and just lost, you know, if you've ever seen that kind of seizure, it leaves you with neurological damage, or can. And just things like that, it just continued on and on, and it probably still continues. I was fortunate that I could get out, but prayers to the other people there that haven't been so fortunate yet. But, you know, who knows? When that guy hung himself, he might have cursed that place. Mm. You know, I do know the name of the company, but I'm not going to say it. But he might have said, you know, XYZ Financial Corporation, and, you know, I curse you to the devil. It could have been something like that. You know, you don't know what last words, if any, he might have had. So was it a curse? I mean, it certainly left its effect. It's still there in that building, as far as I know.
Something there could have also pushed on his cracks in his.
Yeah, it could have been something already there that just pushed him over the edge. So
that's what I think it was.
Again, you can't factor in an unknown, unfortunately, in cases like that. So have to deal with it as best you can and be prepared. I mean, I'd get up and sage myself before I went to work in the morning, smudge myself, put salt in my shoes. You know, it's like people might laugh at that and think, but it works. And I believe in whatever works.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. But you should have heard him, Shannon, on the phone. That's the one. And Shannon was kind of in on that too, because I remember talking to Shannon and telling him, I mean, he's circling the drain.
And we were exactly worried about you, and I wanted to, that was one of my questions, was when was this, because I was going to bring that up. I mean, not to, you know, make it all too personal, but Cisco and I were worried about you, and we were talking about that. We couldn't get a hold of you, and we were really, really worried about you, Steve.
Yeah, some dark times. It's been, I will say that, it's been between three and 4 years ago, I think.
And it was like I would get up in the middle of the night and I'd see Steve, and he was literally circling like a,
yeah,
like whirlwind, like a drain, and I would just try it and try, and it would say, try them now, because sometimes that stuff can block you to where if something's trying to get in to help you, it'll stop them, try to stop them. And they couldn't get me on my end because I was just like, nah. And but it had him so weak. And that time I got him on the phone, I said, listen, Steve. He goes, no, I'm just so sick, I got to go. I said, you will stay on the phone. You will listen to what I have to say. I said, it's trying to make you go back and get some. And I described it to him down to the point that it was tiny and it was brown.
Incredible.
And it
was, you're incredible, you know? Cisco.
And he said, oh, my God. And that broke through.
That did it. And you know, before that, I'm not one that gets sick. I don't get colds. I don't get flu. I have seasonal allergies and some sinus issues. The only time I've ever had the flu in my entire life, 1985, I took a flu shot and I thought I was going to die. I haven't had the flu shot since. I haven't had the flu since either. So either it worked really, really, really good, or it gave me the flu that one time, and that's why I've never taken it again.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I would get, something would happen. Seemed like every week I would get a little sicker. Mm-hmm. This would happen and that would happen. My blood pressure goes up. I got something going on with my throat. I started having migraines. I got gout in one foot and then the other. And, you know, just like, it was something all the time. Plus, it was a high-stress job. I mean, and right. You could say, yeah, the stress had a lot to do with that. But I've been in a lot more stressful situations and didn't have that kind of physical reaction to it.
Cisco, did you ever get a bead on, or a vision, if that's the right word, of what it was? Was it a person causing this, a passed on person, or was it something darker and maybe that wasn't ever human?
Yeah, that's more what I got. And it was on the land before that place was ever built. So any business, anything, a curse, like almost like a curse, like a moving curse. And what those things do, it's almost like it's like the story I just wrote. There's something in there that's ancient, and it just feeds on the weakness, and it gets more power, energy, whatever, from taking something good and cracking it and breaking it, you know, piece by piece, much like the gin was trying to do to my bartender friend. I think all of these things have an interlying theme, and I just, you know, it's just like you get like a little piece of it, you know, but you don't have to cover to the box. You got all these little pieces, you know, but we don't really understand. And I don't know that we're supposed to understand. We're just supposed to, I think, respect the fact that there's power and energy in everything. You know, a song can make you happy, or it can make you sad, or it can make you want to bang your head on the wall, you know, or anything can. And, you know, we have that kind of energy within us. We are energy. That's why I believe we don't ever end. We just change form. And I believe that's what ghosts are, and spirits, and, you know, things like that. I've seen too much. I don't have answers to a lot of things, because these things kind of shift back and forth and blur into each other and cover a lot of different territory. But when you back up and you kind of get that 40,000 foot view of it, it's these things that are here probably before we ever were, seem to get an awful lot out of destroying people, breaking them. And I think that's what was on that land. Yeah. And whatever it was smart. It was intelligent enough to know that Steve would go, he wouldn't go back for a clothes or, you know, whatever, or even a job, a paycheck, but he would go back for that one little thing that his daughter gave him. And I said, she wouldn't want you to go back because you'll never come out of it.
Well, I mean, you say you don't have all the answers, but you're still quite the badass, Cisco, because to be able to see that from across the country and be able to say, you know, it's small, it's brown, like, just don't go back for it. And to peg that very, that only one thing that he would go back for when he admitted he had a desk full of stuff, that's incredible. And this is for both of you guys. And if that was your building or your land and you were tasked with trying to come up with a way to cleanse the land or the building, whatever it might be, you know, assuming that you would even want to screw with something like that, right? Just assuming that. Where would you even start with that?
Bill Bean. Cisco probably agree with me on that one.
Bill Bean. But Bill Bean would probably tell you that something like that, there's places, and, you know, we say this a lot, that, you know, Native Americans will tell you nothing should be there. There's places where things won't grow. If animals don't want to go there, why would people want to go there?
That'd be the only alternative, just knock it down and pave over it and turn it into a parking lot or a park or something. And even then, you know, people get flat tires, or if it was a playground, kids would break their arms or something. I don't know. I don't know if there is any real answer for that.
Turn it over to nature. You could, you know, some things you can appease. If it was something like, if it was something elemental or something that was nature based, you could give it back to nature. You know, say knock down the building, stop trying to conduct business and having a life there, and turn it back into nature, like turn it into a, you know, a forest or a grove or something. But, you know, still, I wouldn't say people should be there. Nobody should be there. But always have a, because if that thing it has that spot, it's just drawing you in, like turning on a light bulb on the porch, you know, it brings in the bugs. You know, for whatever reason you come in there, you're going to not be the same. And if you have a weakness, it's going to play on that weakness. You know, what, no matter what that weakness is, whether it's physical or mental or, you know, emotional, whatever, it's going to play on that and twist it and keep playing with you until it breaks you like a toy.
I just remember that time very vividly, because every time I would talk to Cisco, I'd go, well, did you talk to Steve? And either it was no, I can't get a hold of him, or yes, I did, and it's not good.
Right. But I was sending him stuff other than the phone, too. Yeah. I would send him things and, you know. And I'd say little things to him like, enjoy those English muffins. He goes, how'd you know? I just opened
Amazing.
We do that stuff a lot. You know, another time we had that. I'd looked at some English muffins and you said, Mario walked in the door, and Mario is Cisco's husband. And he said, I don't know why I stopped and got these. And he had English muffins, and it was just,
that's amazing.
Sometimes it's little things like that that just keeps you connected. And, you know, you say it's me and I'm badass. I think I just listen. I think my guides are badass because do you see what I mean? It's like they know who's going to listen. There's a gentleman who's really good, and you should absolutely have him on, Chad. His name is Rob Guttrow. He is absolutely amazing. And I think he's one of the people that when you sit down and talk to him, he's just like, and I'm like, yes, that's right. Yes. You know, it's like he gets it. And he, you know, just his description even of ghosts, because he's also a scientist, he works for NASA, and so he does science with it, and he tries to, you know, make sense, and it's just a wonderful combination. But anyways, also a fabulous medium that talks to animals, and he's an animal communicator, and brings in spirits of animals, and you know, comforts their grieving, you know, people, and it's a wonderful thing to be around. And I was talking to him the other night, and this is his story, but he was talking about why ghosts connect to certain people. And we were talking about, you know, how I keep getting pulled to certain battlefields. And, you know, we were talking about reincarnation, and is it possible that I once fought in the war and left people behind, and that's why I'm so drawn to that one. I mean, why would I go drive past 30 different battlefields to get to one? There's something, there's a different kind of a draw for that. And we were talking about how the higher entities that I listen to are that put those things like, call Steve now, he's circling. You know, that's not my thought. I put in there and I'm listening to it, if that makes sense. Or it's a connection from his people to my people. Like maybe his guides are tapping my guides and go, get her. She'll listen. She's going to make the call. She's going to stay on it. I think that's more what it is. But this little story here, and it's heartbreaking. He calls it the burned ghost. This young lady was in a car accident. God love her. And she was trapped in the car and she burned alive. And which is just horrible for anybody to go that way. Well, she lived. They got her out, but she was, you know, like in and out, in and out. She was fighting for her life and she lived for a few days. And the nurse that took care of her showed her more love and more kindness and more care and the kind words and everything that she said that she had ever felt in her entire life. Well, she attached when she passed, she followed the light of this nurse and she followed her home. And it took the nurse a little bit to try to figure out what was going on. She, of course, had no idea who it was or what it was. Of course, she just sees things moving and things banging and, you know, until she finally sought help. Rob and another medium got together, and they were trying to unravel, and they like to work separate on the same thing so they don't mix their energies. And they were both getting this young woman. Well, Rob was getting her strong, and she was making Rob relive how she died. To the point her ear, she would show him that her earrings melted into her face. Mm. You know, details. And he has to live through this. And that's why, you know, we should have a lot more respect for mediums. They go through such literal hell. They really do. It takes a lot out of people that go through these things. But they unraveled it, found out that she followed that nurse home and figured because she had so much love within her that she could help her cross. And she said, why would she come to me why would she think that I could help her cross? I don't know anything about this. He said, but you called me and we're going to help her cross. And they did. That's how it works. You get it?
Yeah. Sometimes that it's just woman. The luck of the draw. You know, like you've heard us talk about the biker that I was having visitations from, that I got a hold of Cisco and she got a hold of somebody and we got that situation taken care of. But why me? You know, why did he pick me to come and talk to? And because it was other people all together, and, you know, it was people that I knew Cisco and she knew people. So it was kind of a roundabout way, but that was because I'd listen, because I was like, you know, my light shined in the darkness. It's one of those things you don't really know. Yeah. How you're chosen or why you're chosen, but sometimes you just are, and then you've got to deal with it in whatever way it takes. And glad you mentioned battlefields there, Cisco. That was a nice segue. Thank you. Totally unplanned, but that's going to take me into my next story. And then and we've talked a lot about battlefields. You know, Cisco has a particular fondness of Gettysburg, but all the battlefields that I've visited, and that includes Revolutionary War sites here in America. I've been to some of the World War I battlefields in France and World War II in Japan, and even some of the killing fields in Cambodia and some of the places where the Vietnam War occurred. But there's just none of them that seem to have the sheer amount of paranormal activity that those from the Civil War era do here in the States. And again, Cisco and I have talked about this at length, but there's just an extra dark pall that hangs over these battlegrounds. And talk to any paranormal research and they'll tell you, you know, there's supernatural energy in those locations, Gettysburg, Antietam, Shiloh, Chickamauga, just rife with it. And I think Cisco agrees with me to some degree that this extra dark energy comes from just the sheer numbers of lives lost tragically and suddenly during this, you know, it was an internal war. It was a time when truly it was brother against brother. I had family on both sides. It was America. It was Americans killing Americans on American soil. And that, you know, it never happened. But for whatever reason, just those lonesome ghosts, the war, and that's been over 150 years now. And down south, they call it the dark and bloody ground, you know, just because of all that. A lot of people, particularly those from the north, probably don't have any idea that there was a smaller Civil War within the Civil War in the South. And it's, you know, nowadays you don't hear much about it. I don't know if it's kind of overlooked or just lost to the mists of time. But there were a lot of Southerners who were against secession in 1861. And they met the idea with a real violent opposition, put themselves and their family members at risk of injury and death. These pockets of Southern Unionists, if you will, they were throughout Appalachia, but particularly in East Tennessee and Western North Carolina, West Virginia. Now, this Civil War within the Civil War, just as vicious as the Maine War, maybe more so. Fighting was bloody, and lots of skirmishes. And those that supported the Confederacy, the Unionists in their midst like that, that was viewed as just the worst kind of traitors. And they like to deal with them accordingly. Now, this little town that I used to live in, it's up in the upper northeastern tip of Tennessee. It's, you go one direction, you're in Boone, North Carolina, you go the other direction, it takes you into Damascus, Virginia, and the Abingdon Trail, or the Appalachian Trail there, heading into Abingdon. Now, it was in that area. There's some of the biggest battles in the Civil War, within the Civil War, occurred, the Unionists and the Confederates. that whole district earned the name of the Bloody Third just because it was so vicious. And I mean, we're talking feuds that didn't end just because of the Civil War. There's, to this day, more than 15 decades later, there's still neighbors or people that had been neighbors that are still feuding with each other and still mad at one another over stuff they've probably forgotten, or kind of like a Hatfield and McCoy type thing. They fought for so long, they didn't even know what they were fighting about anymore. And it's kind of that way there. You have people that would, oh, well, we hate this family and they hate us. We don't really know why, but it was probably something like this. But if you go out there in this one area, now the whole area, there's full of caves and things there. There's Roan Mountain. Now it has a spook light, a fireball. And I've heard reports of a cave that has spiders as big as cats. So that'd be a big nope. And nearby Stone Mountain, which not to be confused with Stone Mountain in Georgia. It's just another Stone Mountain. There's a place called Fiddler's Rock where you can still hear fiddle music of a guy that used to charm rattlesnakes out from the rocks with his fiddle. But near there, there's a vertical cave opening. It's a thought to be a bottomless pit. There's been stories of, you know, people throwing stuff in it and that not having a bottom. Now, I don't really know which side came up with the idea first, but they thought it would be a good idea. Sometimes when either the Unionists or the Confederates captured one of their opponents, they'd put an iron bar across this hole, this bottomless pit. And the original idea was to keep, you know, a horse or a wagon or somebody from falling into it. But then they got the idea that it would be a fun thing to take a prisoner of war and make them dangle from that iron bar over this bottomless pit. Now, they make them do this at gunpoint. Both sides did it. And you held on as long as you could. When your strength gave out, you fell to your death. Now, as time went on, you know, they got a little more vicious about it. They would either stomp on their hands or shoot at their fingers, you know, trying to make them shift back and forth to make it more fun for those watching, I guess, if you can consider such a heinous act fun. But a lot of these were men that had been on horseback and they wore spurs. Now, the process of hanging from this bar and being suspended down in this pit, kicking and going on, the spurs would jingle. So that it got the name the Jingling Hole. And to this day, now, of course, after the war, the use of the pit is torture and execution stopped. But for years afterwards and up until now, anybody that passes by there at night claims to hear that jingling sound from the spurs of the people that once hung in there. There's been tales of moans and cries coming up out of the jingling hole. There are stories of, I know one particular person lives up there that was in that area one night and heard somebody singing a hymn from down within this hole. Now, if that won't get your attention, imagine being out at 2 o'clock in the morning and hearing a Civil War era hymn being sung from a bottomless pit where no telling how many people met their death. That's still there. It's near Mountain City, Tennessee. The locals all know where it is, but good luck. They might tell you where it's at, but good luck trying to convince any of them to go there with you, because most people avoid it like the plague just because of the things that I've been there, didn't hear anything, but I didn't stick around very long because it's got that pall. It's got that, you know, that darkness about it. You can feel it. I mean, it's palpable. It's when you get into that area, even I knew the first time I went there, somebody took me there. I knew when we were getting close to it. That was in broad daylight, just that feeling. So again, you know, is that cursed? Was there something already there? Same with Chickamauga Battlefield. There, it's Fort Oglethorpe, Georgia, just across the state line there from Chattanooga. They've had all kinds of supernatural things going there, paranormal activity. There's an entity known as Old Green Eyes that still makes appearances. There was a park ranger there, he's retired now, that had several encounters with it. And it's one of those things that, the more you delved into it, I found out that they were actually seeing that in the area during the battle, that there, whatever this was floating around among the wounded and dying. So was that something that was already there? And again, this is, you know, the Cherokee have their tale and things about here. So it's possible that the ground was already cursed, and maybe that's why it just happened to be a place where a big battle took place and thousands of people lost their lives. It was one of the bloodiest single-day conflicts in the war.
So, and to this day, we still don't know if it is actually bottomless. No one's ever explored it, dropping anything down there.
Yeah, they've tried that. I've heard stories. I threw a rock in it and didn't hear anything. But I heard that somebody had lowered a large river rock on a rope several hundred feet. And then when they started pulling the rope back up, they noticed it was light. Sure enough, the rock was gone and the rope looked like it'd been bitten.
Oh, my goodness.
And somebody else, and this was 15 or more years ago, so technology has changed. It might be a better time to investigate it. Now, somebody had took a little, like a little Sony micro cassette recorder and had lowered it down in there, not that far, maybe 50 or 100 feet. And they got like some EVPs and some moaning and perhaps muffled screams on the tape. And it scared them so bad, they swore to never go back.
Well, that's it, Steve. You're going to have to show me where this hole is so we can get it across.
When Cisco I get back to Tennessee,
road trip. And then it's just up the road. We can go see the Brown Mountain Lights.
I've been in darker places.
Or go over into Abingdon, Virginia, Martha Washington Inn, one of the most haunted places I've ever had the pleasure of staying, just across the street from the Barter Theater, which is haunted as well. I don't think there's any theater, though, that doesn't have at least one ghost. And that kind of leads me into my next story. I've provided my own segue there. But the Bijou Theater, Knoxville, Tennessee, it's downtown on Gay Street. It's been there since early 1900s, open as a vaudeville show place. There was a bigger, grander theater, the Tennessee Theater, just across the street, kind of catty-cornered. But the Bijou hosted a lot of people. The Marx Brothers had been there. I've lost it here, but there were several well-known people at the time that performed there. And in the 70s, it kind of went down on its luck and became an art theater, which it actually showed adult movies. And that was all that kept it from being knocked down. They did a lot of renovation in Knoxville during that time and knocked a lot of those old, beautiful Victorian buildings down and put parking structures in there. Go figure. But it was saved. Later became known as the Lamar House, which was actually the hotel that's attached to it, or was Lamar House Bijou Theater. Now it's they have concerts and things there. I saw the Ramones there back in the day, but it still shows films and things, but it's more of an artistic variety and silent films and things like that, the occasional rock and roll show. But there's a restaurant attached to the side of it called the Bistro at the Bijou. And this has been a long time ago, but I was working for a gentleman at the time who was a surgeon who decided he wanted to go to law school. So he and his staff, one of those was me, we helped put him through law school by doing his papers and things for him. And when he graduated and became an MD-JD, he took us all out to dinner. And that was it's not too far from the UT campus, University of Tennessee, Knoxville. So we went there for this dinner, rented out the room in the back, and they really put on a feed for us. Well, same night, somebody else was having some sort of to-do in there, too, so it was really crowded. And in order to get to the bathrooms, I would have to, like, go around a bunch of people I didn't know and try to squeeze past, you know, people in chairs and things. So I thought, well, I think there's bathrooms out in the lobby. I'll go out there. So I went out to the lobby, and for whatever reason, and I've been in there several times since then. You go out the door of the restaurant into one, you can go out the front or you can go out the side. You go out the side, you end up in the lobby of the theater. And it was closed. Of course, the theater was dark. And for whatever reason, I didn't see the restrooms, which are just right over in the corner. Going back and looking at it during the day, I don't know how I missed it. But for whatever reason, I didn't see them. And there's this grand staircase there that goes up to a mezzanine level and then a balcony up beyond that. It's a nice place. And I thought, well, I know there's bathrooms up on the mezzanine level. I'll go up there. And it's pitch dark. And I'm thinking, well, I remember about where they are. I started up that grand staircase, and I got about maybe a quarter of the way, third of the way up it. And I felt something coming down the other side on the stairs, brush up against my arm. And it wasn't just a little touch or, you know, maybe a light breeze or something. It was a heavy something brushed up against me. Well, I changed my mind. I trotted back down the stairs and still didn't see the bathroom. So I went outstairs and or went outside and relieved myself behind the dumpster. So, but anyway, came back in after that, went to the restroom inside that I could get to now. The other party had left, washed my hands, went back to my table. Well, we were getting ready to leave, and I thought, you know, I'm gonna go out there one more time and just have a look around. And this, it was getting close to midnight by this point. We'd tipped the staff well. They stayed late to take care of us. Well, I go back out in this dark lobby, and I wasn't going to brave the stairs again, but I'm just looking around, and I hear what sounds like somebody rehearsing. It was a man and a woman, and the voices were very clear. I couldn't really tell what they were saying, but they were saying it with, you know, like a, in a stage voice. You could tell that it was being practiced or read, and they were saying the same thing. Like, but it would take turns. And I thought, oh, well, somebody's in here, you know, real late practicing for a play or something that's coming up. So I went to the doors that opened into the auditorium, and I could still hear it right until I got right to the doors. The minute I opened the door into the auditorium, absolute silence. And there was no lights on in the auditorium save for the emergency exit lights that I could see in the back. Nobody in there, no voices, nada. So I quietly closed the door and went back into the restaurant till we left. Now, flash forward about 5 or 6 years, a girl I was dating at the time, we had gone into the Bijou during the daytime. I just wanted to show her around. She was from another area, and she had her daughter with her. We went into the lobby, and I don't know if there was anything going on there or not, but it was, the doors were unlocked, so I just went in. And sure enough, there's the restrooms over in the corner that I totally missed the one night. And she's like, well, I need to take my daughter to the bathroom. So they went in there. And I'm just walking around the lobby, looking around, remembering all this stuff from before that had happened. And I hear them yelling and screaming and going on in there. I thought they were just having a good time. Well, finally, they come tearing out of there. And the lady that I was dating, she said, let's get out of here now. And just out the door, daughter right behind her. And she was crying. And we got out on the sidewalk, and I'm like, what on earth happened? And she said, well, we were in there. We kept hearing what sounded like somebody in another stall. They were either humming or singing. And then the toilet flushed by itself. Nobody came out, and the little girl had peeked under the stall. There was nobody in there. And then as they went up to wash up, one of the sinks came on by itself and then turned off. And this weren't motion detector modern stuff. It's the old porcelain handle, you know, with four little spokes on it that you have to turn. They left a lot of the original stuff in there. So they didn't even bother to wash their hands. They just ran out the door. So there's another place that's haunted. I've also heard stories of people that were in there rehearsed, they were supposed to be, that were rehearsing for a play. They see somebody up in the balcony sitting in one of the end seats when there's not supposed to be anybody up there. Mm. Sure enough, they go up there, nobody to be found. But again, I don't think I've ever been in a theater, an older one especially, that didn't have at least one ghost.
When was the last time that you were in the Bijou Theater?
Or in that hotel? About 15 years ago.
Wow. Any changes to that building since, or is it still, they're keeping all the old school stuff in there?
As far as I know, it hasn't changed since the last renovation, which was probably in the 80s, 90s, sometime like that.
Yeah, that makes you think if they were to, and I totally love when a place will, you know, they'll keep the old furnishings and fixtures in a building, but it does make you wonder if somebody bought the place and then decided, I'm going to modernize this whole thing, what kind of shit might come down on their heads, you know, as far as who is ever in there kind of going, you're not messing with my place, this is my place.
Yeah, a lot of times, a guest that Cisco had on her show, Michael Laciana, he looks into things like that. And we talked about that, where a lot of times when you start doing some sort of renovation, that's when the spiritual activity or the supernatural, paranormal, whatever activity really kicks up. You've disturbed the ghost. You know, this is their home. And there was a house that I lived in Oak Ridge one time where I would hear a door slam in a room where there was no door. One day, the guy that owned the house had come over there to get something out of a shed where he stored things out back. I was looking at the side of the house and I said, Mike, was there ever a door there where that window's at? And he said, you've heard it slam, haven't you? And my jaw hit the ground. And he said, yeah, there used to be a wooden door there. And then when we remodeled the house, we put a window in there and put sliding glass door farther down on that end of the house. So, but I would hear, and other people have heard it when I did, would hear a door, I mean, slam hard enough to rattle the walls, but there wasn't a door that you could slam there. All there was a sliding glass door and a window. So sometimes, even though it physically changes on some level or in some realm or however you want to look at it, it's still like it used to be. And I think that's why sometimes you'll see ghosts that walk through walls or things like that, that what they're walking through wasn't a wall when they originally walked through there. Now, that may be more of a residual thing, or, but again, who knows?
Now, Steve, do you think that the door slamming, is that cause and effect is, you know, the door was there and then so there's a ghost still there slamming the door, or is that just the house kind of reliving what it's been used to for a very long time?
Well, I had a young lady come over one night that claimed to be a psychic and could detect ghosts and things like that. And she said there were two there. She said there was a spirit of a woman, and it liked to stay in the attic, and it was quiet. And it was actually afraid of the ghost that lived in the basement, which was of a man, and he was very angry. Well, she didn't call it a ghost. She called it a spirit. Mm-hmm. I assume it was a ghost. But there were a lot of problems in the basement, too, and it just had that feeling to it. As a lot of times, if I had to go to the basement for anything, I would run up the steps when came back. You know, just had that feeling, and even then, there were gaps between the stairs, and just wait for something to reach out and grab your ankle.
Oh, but, that's the worst when the stairs have the gaps.
And I had my computer stuff set up in what had been the dining room that was at the top of the stairs where the door was to the basement. And there was one night I heard somebody come up the stairs. I mean, very obvious footfalls. It stopped at the door. There was a door that went outside and then one that came into the dining room there. It stopped on a little platform there and the doorknob jiggled. Well, I jumped up. I had at that time a piece of pipe, an iron pipe that I used to put in the track of the sliding glass door so nobody could break in, you know, by jimmying the lock. Well, I grabbed that and I'm like, you know, I'm ready for you. Got that in one hand. It's maybe 3 feet long. I grab the knob, yank it open, and there's absolutely nothing there. The door going to outside is still not only locked on the knob and a deadbolt, but the chain across the top of it is in place. So nobody went out there unless they knew how to reach back in and put a chain on, which couldn't be done. They didn't come into the dining room because I was there and opened the door, and I didn't hear them go back down the stairs. Mm. So what was that? You know, again, that was before I had this girl come over that told me all those things about the house.
Man, yeah. The thinking of having to run up the stairs and there's the opening through the stairs.
Yeah, it was almost like a compulsion. Mm-mm. And I don't get scary. You know, I don't get creeped out. I've been in some real frightening situations and I love it. But there was just something about that basement that when you come up out of the stairs, especially because the light was down at the bottom, when you turn that light off and head up the stairs, it put a little pep in your step.
Oh,
just
my gosh.
That feeling that there's something down here that I'm not comfortable being in the dark with.
Both of you guys have been in some of the most interesting and frightening situations. And, you know, might I say that anytime I talk about you guys to anyone else, I always label each one of you as wonderful and incredible storytellers, and that's certainly what you guys are. So it's only natural that, you know, you guys are narrating, you're doing shows, you're writing books. It's just, it's as it should be, rather, is what I was trying to say. But I can't thank you guys enough for doing this again with me. We got the 5th annual all done. I'm super excited. And I mean, I know I'll be talking to you guys many, many times until our 6th annual comes up. But before we go, of course, please let everyone know where to find you guys, your shows, your books, any of the social media stuff that you guys want to get out so people can get in touch with you.
Cisco, I'll defer to the lady. You go first.
Well, thank you. It's my podcast is Journey Through the Gate Paranormal Portal Podcast. Yes, we like long titles. It's on YouTube. Please go subscribe, like, get in there quick, because tomorrow Steve and I are doing the final chapter of The Strange Case of Cabin 22, and don't miss it, because all hell is breaking loose on the mountain, and these characters are something else, and I'm going to miss them. I'm going to miss them all. When you write something like this, you come attached. So get in there and listen to it, and we're going to do a... Steve and I are both going to play it on our channel simultaneously tomorrow in live chat. Come be in the virtual campfire and talk about your favorite characters and stuff and see what happens to these guys. Also, the book that Steve and I did, We Are All Children in the Wilderness of the Afterlife, A Guided Tour Through a Haunted Life, is on Amazon and Kindle. And I lowered the price big time for Halloween. So enjoy that. And you can always hear Steve and I on lots of different stuff. We're all over the place. He's got a fantastic YouTube channel, too. Tell him about it, Steve.
Yeah, well, I still have 13 Past Midnight. That's my personal channel where I narrate things that have happened to me and some fiction by request. I know last Christmas I did 12 Victorian ghost stories for the 12 Nights of Christmas / 12 Nights of Krampus. And now this year, something new that I'm doing since about May or so, I'm the narrator and co-owner now of Missing Persons and Mysteries on YouTube. We've got a big audience over there growing just wildly. We're just about to break 54,000 subscribers. Again, the focus is on missing persons, but it's the missing 411 type fare, you know, strange disappearances, unusual disappearances. And we have a Land of the Lost series. And then also the mysteries part of that channel name, that covers a lot of ground. So do some paranormal stuff, some cryptids and things too. A lot of fun over there. And I'd like to shout out my Jersey girl, other than Cisco, Gemma Jade. She does a true crime thing, and she has a great YouTube channel. We're going to be working on some stuff together. We're going to collaborate, have a podcast, and some other things coming out of that. So really excited and looking forward to that. The night that we're recording this, I'm going to be doing the first episode with her tomorrow to be released at a later time. And I'm on Facebook, SteveStockton81. That's also my email address, SteveStockton81@gmail.com. Love to hear from people. One of the things that we do on Missing Persons and Mysteries is listener stories. And we've had everything. We've had Glimmer Man. We've had Shadow People. We've had Bigfoot. We've had Dog Man. And all kinds of ghost stories, demon stories, things. So give it a listen. If you listen to some of those subscriber stories, listener stories, if you've got a similar tale, send it to me at that address and I'll read it on the air. And also on Twitter, @StrangeAndOdd is my handle on there. I like to say I'm Strange and Odd, and that's also my Twitter handle. So, but
that's very fitting. What else?
Had a good time, Shannon. Thank you for the kind words. Also, books, Beyond the Fray Publishing combined my first two books and brought them out in paperback. That's doing really, really well. Strange Things in the Woods. And then My Strange World, also out in paperback. That's available on Amazon. And My Strange World is also available, Kindle, the paperback, and an Audible audiobook version. So lots of good things going on over there.
Absolutely. Happy to have you on board. Well, you guys, I have to say, I love you. Thank you so much for all the time that you put in for ITF, myself, and of course for my listeners. I mean, they love they're always like, when Steve and Cisco coming on, let's do this. They love hearing you guys. So, and Cisco, thanks for coming on after a long day of work. Really appreciate it.
I was looking forward to it all day. And I just have one question for Steve. Steve, you're doing so good and we're so proud of you. Aren't you glad you didn't go back and get that little Buddha, sweetie?
Absolutely. Best move I ever made. And I kind of hate to say it because I know everybody's having an absolute crap year. But in typical Steve Stockton fashion, 2020 is the best year I've ever had. So
you are twisted.
I mean, somebody's got to have a good year.
I'm a hermit anyway. I stay home. I don't get out unless I absolutely have to. I've been that way. I told Cisco I've been practicing for quarantine for the last 15, 20 years.
You're like, quarantine? This is just my life. What's the big
deal? Stay at home.
Yeah.
I have Instacart for my groceries. I do have to get out once a month and do my banking and pay my rent and that. But, you know, I can deal with that. I just, somebody said, how can you stay at home all the time? And I, all my stuff is here, and I don't like people. And I just, that's kind of a joke. I don't have anything against anybody. I don't do well in crowds. I'm kind of socially awkward. So home is a good place for me. Got me and Mr. Mulder here, and we're having the time of our lives.
That's right. And you and Mulder, you like to create. Now you have a podcast coming out, which is fitting. You got YouTube, you got writing to do. So, I mean, why do you need to go out? You don't need to go anywhere.
Yeah, I've got everything I need right here. Also do electronic music and things like that. I do that here. I've got a studio set up. Been working with a guy in L.A. who's scored some things on Netflix and maybe have an opportunity there. And then I know you and I talked about, you know, maybe some other stuff maybe finding its way over that direction. And I can't say a lot about it, but I was cast in a paranormal TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read three of the scripts. It's unlike any paranormal show that's ever been on TV. I'll say that about it. I signed a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't say a lot. But we're going to do three episodes. That's what the production company has funding for, and shop that around and see. But the producer's sister works at a big cable stream provider company. Can't mention anything, but we'll think through a little nepotism. We have a door in there because the sister works in acquisitions. So that was supposed to take place already, like back in April or May. We were supposed to film for that, but everything 2020 happened then, and keeps getting pushed back. It was May, then August, then October, and now here it'll probably be after the first of the year. And then I'm thinking even then it'll probably be in spring because it's going to be in some state parks and national forests out here in the Pacific Northwest. So lots of good things on the horizon. Like I said, again, I feel sorry for people, but best year I've ever had.
Hey, so like I said, somebody has to have a decent year. And Steve, as Cisco said earlier, happy birthday. If you guys are online on Halloween, that is Steve's birthday. Go paint his Facebook wall with a bunch of happy birthday wishes, if you would, please.
Thank you, Shannon. Just you and Cisco, this is great. There's no two people that I'd rather spend time with.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween. Halloween. Stay spooky.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little firework. Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. And then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are.
No, we don't believe literally in reincarnation. That after your funeral, you know, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you'll be reincarnated. If you are liberated, you will understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it in this way. He said, spring does not become the summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.